Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a summery Monday afternoon in downtown Chicago. We're sitting in the Allstate Showcase studio and looking at a beautiful crowd along Michigan Avenue. Oh, there's a beautiful crowd inside the studio as well. Jim Dahlke and Karis Husted are here from Chicago Inno. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
So it's the normal Monday hit for Chicago Inno, but the boss, Will Flanagan, is traveling around, so Karis is sitting in today.
Yes, boss is out east, so yeah, we're running the show here.
I'm taking over.
Well, let's start with the University of Chicago New Venture Challenge, because, you know, it seems to me like that's new. That's where it's all at, these schools fostering this growth and providing incubator space and all that. But then I read that this is the 20th year, so they've been doing this for quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. But the growth has really come in recent years. In the 140 companies that have come out of the New Venture Challenge, they've raised over $434 million in total funding and $3.7 billion in mergers and exits. So these are companies like Grubhub and Braintree. So it's actually been a big driver of Chicago's startup growth.
And the big winner this year is a company called Transparent. Ends with the C, but it's all about transparency. Tell me about what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is a platform that helps students and job seekers get access to reliable crowdsourced information about compensation and career trajectories. So it's kind of trying to take on the Glassdoors and LinkedIns of the world. But if you've tried to go to any of those sites, they're very complicated, very confusing, kind of a lot of aggregate data. It doesn't really tell you what you should be looking for in your job or your negotiation.
So the idea is, if you're applying for a job or you've been given a job offer, you can go to Transparency and see what is a typical pay, right? What would be in line for you? What would be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's pretty important, especially looking at some of the biases in compensation, you know, that women are paid less and minorities are paid less as well. So it's just giving some true transparency into that process. And they're starting with MBA students, because that's another thing that's a little bit confusing. Say an MBA student wants to go to a startup, they're not really sure how to negotiate that with equity and pay. So they're starting with MBA students, but they hope to go to law, engineering, and
so they're not doing like radio hosts yet?
Not yet,
not
but
for the 15 who are left in the business.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a big enough market there.
And who finished second in this year?
Yeah, so second was Coronado Conservation, which is a high efficiency toilet.
I know, I just wanted to make you say it.
Yes.
Dahlke, you have anything to add here?
About high efficiency toilets?
No, about the University of Chicago venture. I mean, this is the way, I mean, these schools are, their schools, they're educating, but they're fostering too, aren't they?
Exactly. And this accelerator challenge is nationally ranked as one of the best in the country. I mean, it goes against a Y Combinator and traditional accelerators, except this is just for one university. So some of the biggest tech power that's come out of Chicago has been through the New Venture Challenge, which is really exciting.
Did you say Groupon was one of them?
No. Grubhub.
Grubhub, right, because we always talk about Groupon in one way or another, whether it's good or bad. All right, so then they do the same thing at Northwestern. They do something similar?
That's right. So on the same day, on Thursday last week, Northwestern held its version of the exact same competition. So 11 companies were down there, and two startups tied for first place. The Grade Network, which is a really interesting startup for teachers. It matches teachers with teaching assistants.
I don't understand how that works. What do they do?
So it's a platform that connects teachers with available teacher assistants who help with grading. So it basically frees teachers up from having to spend all these tedious hours grading papers. Someone else can grade the papers, and the teachers can do some more meaningful work with their students.
Okay, but so if you're teaching at a university, doesn't the school provide you with teaching assistants?
Some schools, but some maybe don't. I mean, it depends on the resources of the school, right? I mean, some universities, some high schools have lots of funding for different teacher assistants, and some don't. So this is going to connect teachers with teaching assistants, free them up, do some more meaningful work, some more one-on-one stuff. So the Grade Network tied for first place with Surgenet, a med tech company that patented a mesh that's used for breast reconstructions after a mastectomy.
That's what I love about these competitions is the immense diversity of products.
I have no idea how the judges decide. Like, we were literally watching lithium-ion battery startups and on-demand school lunch delivery companies. I don't know how you choose between each
one over the other.
Yeah. Right.
I think the on-demand school lunch thing is kind of cool.
It won third place.
Explain that.
So that's PACT, P-A-K apostrophe D, and what they
let me tell you.
We know.
And it happens. It falls on mothers more than fathers. But moms hate to pack a lunch, and it becomes so much worse than it actually is. It's just this festering sort of hatred of it. So this would be a solution.
Yes,
for that.
First of all, I thought you were complaining about the spelling of
pack. Yeah. That's what we always think about.
But you're right, exactly. I mean, and that's what a lot of the parents in the crowd were saying, like, wow, this is so great. So basically, PACT delivers a pre-made, healthy customizable school lunch to the student's home. So
do they cut the crust off the bread?
Whatever you want. If you want the crust cut off, they'll do that.
That's the important
part.
Package
it in these little triangles and send it to the school, to the kids at the house before school. Parents don't have to spend the 20, 30 minutes every day making lunches.
It's 10 minutes. It's seven at the most.
How many kids do you have?
Yeah. I don't know, but it's just a funny thing.
I don't like doing my lunch, so I would sign up for this.
It's just a universal thing that is something that has to be done, and so you hate it. But so could you do a Groupon for Pact?
Yeah, presumably, yeah. It's
but not in Indonesia?
No, not in Indonesia.
You're a little far from the lake, but so we talked about Groupon earlier, but they just sold their Indonesian sort of branch, right? And then there's hints that they just gave it away, or what's that about?
So the terms of the deal were not disclosed, but yeah, so basically Groupon has been leaving a lot of its countries lately. So it exited about 7 countries last year, and it is out of Indonesia now this year after selling its Groupon Indonesia business to a 1-year-old startup called K-Fit out of Malaysia. Malaysia kind of is sort of like a class pass model. They do memberships for gyms and beauty salons and different things like that. And so it's kind of an interesting partner that Groupon found in its Indonesia business. TechCrunch reported earlier that we're not sure exactly what the price was. It might have been very little or almost nothing, because now Groupon is going to have a stake in KFIT because of this partnership.
So they find someone to sort of run it, and then they get a little bit of the cash?
Exactly. And this is sort of a strategy that Groupon has been doing for a while. It's trying to get back to its core businesses. It's sort of that startup story about scaling too fast, quickly, and now it's bringing it back in. So it's kind of cutting some of the countries where it maybe isn't doing as well. But, I mean, having said that, Groupon Indonesia did have, I think, over 1 million users. So, I mean, there's a lot of...
So there's something there.
Exactly. And so Groupon, I think, just in an effort to sort of focus on its core businesses, is still trying to exit some of these countries.
That's Jim Dahlke. Karis Husted is here as well from Chicago Inno. And we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, Lupe Fiasco and Airbnb. You're listening to The Business Lunch. Here we are on 720 WGN. It's not just any business lunch. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. And the Chicago Inno boys are here, Jim Dahlke and Karis Husted, who's no boy at all. Welcome to you, Karis. I'm glad you're sitting in today. Let's talk about Lupe Fiasco. We were talking about this last week, I think, with Blue Sky, about how there's the Chicago Urban League and others are trying to foster, you know, bringing money people into the African-American neighborhoods and things, because there are great ideas, great products there, and they don't always have an audience or people's ear. And Lupe Fiasco is among those trying to change that.
Exactly. Yeah, Lupe Fiasco is getting into the venture capital game, and he started this last year in a fund called the Neighborhood Start Fund, and he launched it back in 2015 in New York in the Brownsville neighborhood with an executive from Waze, so the navigation app. And they launched this last year, sort of the pilot program in New York, and they're growing it. And the Chicago rapper is bringing the fund here to Chicago. So basically, what it does is, it funds entrepreneurs. It funds ideas in some of the city's most marginalized neighborhoods. It's coming to Inglewood and Lawndale, and specifically looking for great ideas from entrepreneurs that live in those neighborhoods. So it's a really, really cool project that it's also expanding to 6 other neighborhoods across the country, really trying to find entrepreneurs that live in neighborhoods that typically get overlooked by angel investors, and to find some entrepreneurs that might not look like Mark Zuckerberg, right?
Right. Well, I like the idea that we don't all know what idea is needed, or what's a good idea for, you know, all of us. As a white suburban guy, I don't have a good picture of what's going on, what's needed in one neighborhood or another. And so the more voices we have, those more voices fueled by cash, probably the better off we'd be.
Yeah, it really kind of combats that, like, stereotype, that startup stereotype, which is, you know, a one guy maybe dropped out of college and, you know, has this big Facebook-like idea. And it reminds us that, you know, no one should define who gets to be a founder, who gets to be an entrepreneur. It's something that entrepreneurship is kind of in every neighborhood, every corner of the city.
And maybe the most exciting thing about the Neighborhood Start Fund is that if any of their companies in their portfolio have an exit, if they have an acquisition or they have an IPO, half of the money that fund generates from that, they're going to invest back into that neighborhood.
So how's that work? So Lupe and Waze, they give them cash. the
right.
business takes off, and so the money that they make from that cash,
half of it goes back into the neighborhood where the entrepreneur is from.
Is that that seems pretty unusual?
Very, yeah. And I mean that's the whole thing about the neighborhood startup fund is that they're really not trying to be your traditional VC fund. I mean, they're not. This isn't charity. I mean, it's business. It's still VC, but the way that they are, sort of taking their profits from that is definitely different, and it's definitely community focused.
Yeah, and what's also really important about that, and we've talked with people about, you know, creating a more diverse pipeline, is that that friends and family round is really hard to get if you don't come from a wealthy
right.
background.
Explain the friends and family round.
Right. So that's like often people's first round of funding, and this means they get $10,000 they
before
raise
before they
from,
see investors.
Yeah. So
you get a
first,
call from your cousin. I got a
thing.
Great idea. I need $1 million.
Right. Yeah. And so it's really hard to get that if you don't come from a wealthy background or a wealthy neighborhood where people can just write you a $10,000, $5,000 check.
So we'll see how that goes. And they're coming to town this summer, right?
Yes. And yeah.
And
later
Lupe
this month,
will not be there in the early rounds. So
they're
going to
do some regionals here later in the year. So yeah, they're going to do some regionals in Chicago where Lupe and the Waze exec will be in Chicago.
Let's talk. We got a couple minutes left. Airbnb, because this has sort of become a summer drama, one of many in Chicago. But there's a move toward increasing regulation. And this one, as opposed to Uber and Lyft, it looked like there was a little, I mean, Airbnb was playing ball a little bit with the city, but things seem to have fallen off track a bit.
Yeah, so last week, a national lobbying association got into the Airbnb regulation fight, and a lot of people think that this is sort of Airbnb saying we're not playing game anymore. So the Internet Association, which has 39 major tech members, including Airbnb, eBay, Lyft, Uber, they call themselves a pro-internet lobbying association, is dropping $1 million in TV, radio, and digital ads going against regulation in Chicago.
And the regulation is they want them what? They want them to pay tax? They want limits on how many Airbnb units can be in a building, things like that?
Yeah, it's all a variety of those things. Includes limits on number of units used in home sharing in a given apartment building. It'll make Airbnb responsible if somebody is disruptive or, you know, has damage. And it also would add a 4% tax onto the rentals, which would go towards services for the
homeless. Because didn't Airbnb say they were willing to pay part of the equivalent of the hotel tax, right? Wasn't that part of it?
Mm-hmm. But I believe this is extra tacked on. So it just keeps including
more. So it would be the hotel tax and another 4% to help with the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And Mayor Emanuel has made it clear that he's not happy about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Sun-Times reported that a mayoral aide, after finding out about this Internet Association ad campaign, said they're going to actually potentially increase the regulations that they're proposing because they see this as Airbnb saying, we're not playing anymore. We're putting our money behind this and we don't want the regulations to happen at all.
And it's fascinating to see how Rahm Emanuel is for regulating Airbnb, but he's against regulating Uber. It's interesting to see how he kind of picks his tech giants and why. I don't know what the exact reason is behind that, but it's curious to see how he's pro-regulation for Airbnb and not so much for Uber.
Because I keep going back to the fact that Airbnb seemed to be a willing partner at one point, but this has gone south.
And maybe this is going to be a reversal of course. We'll see.
All right. That's Jim Dahlke and Karis Husted, both here from Chicago Inno. You can read more at Chicago Inno.
ChicagoInno.com. On the website, you can also sign up for our daily newsletter, The Beat.
Which is an awesome newsletter. You should do that. Thanks, guys. Thanks very much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And when we say lunch, we say it quietly because we have a chicken in the studio. Marianne, the hen, is about 3 feet from me. And holding Marianne is Jennifer Murtaugh from Home to Roost. Jennifer welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
So you're petting a chicken right now.
I am indeed petting a chicken in the middle of Chicago.
And when I heard that a chicken was coming in today, I thought that's cool, but I thought it'd be in a chicken cage.
Well, her cage is in the green room.
Okay.
She is actually a very good bird. She's very well-mannered, very well-behaved.
She's beautiful.
So yeah, she is. She's a very pretty chicken.
What kind of chicken is she?
She is a hybrid egg layer. This is the kind of birds that produce our brown eggs in the supermarket. She's a cross between a Rhode Island Red and a White Leghorn.
Brown eggs cost more.
They do.
Should they?
No.
Really?
So yes.
If you're just buying regular brown eggs and you're spending up, you're probably wasting your money.
That's very true. Yes.
Okay. Well, you're here because you coordinate or consult with people who own their own chickens in the Chicago area.
Yes, correct.
How many of them are there?
Oh, wow. I have 900 people on my mailing list, and those are people who both have chickens and who are interested in getting chickens. There's also a Google group called the Chicago Chicken Enthusiasts, and that, I believe, has about 400 to 500 members.
Okay, and so people who have chickens in their backyard, they have them for the petness of it, or for the eggs, or what's the reason?
Mostly for eggs. Some people keep them because they're good pets, they're good companion animals. I do have some clients who are vegans and won't eat the eggs, but will pass them on to their neighbors. Chickens are also helpful in sort of rototilling your garden and cleaning up and
eating
bugs.
You mean just by pecking around that they...
And they also, they use, their feet are flat, and they have these really powerful toes, so they can do a lot of scratching around in the dirt looking for bugs. So that just helps keep the soil loose. And then their droppings also help to fertilize the soil.
Jennifer, the chicken, Marianne wants to fly away, I'm afraid.
Marianne wants to go exploring.
So I'm a little distracted because the chicken is very cool, very beautiful. I had friends who had a chicken coop up in Bannockburn, a little more rural. And the guy spent all his time fortifying the coop because of the coyotes and raccoons that kept breaking in and killing the chickens. I would imagine that there are issues like that in the city as well.
Yeah, most of the predators we have in the city, the top two are hawks and raccoons. Hawks being diurnal and raccoons being nocturnal. So you've really got to build your coop well, sturdily. I recommend using hardware cloth rather than chicken wire, because chicken wire will keep the birds in, but it won't keep predators out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell me that again. What cloth do you recommend?
It's called hardware cloth, and it's a series of, it kind of looks like the grid paper we used to use in math class.
Okay.
But it's made out of metal, and each intersection of the metal wires is welded, so it's very sturdy. Quarter to half inch square is usually what's recommended for chickens.
All right, so this is a business show, and I'm talking to you because of the businessness of it. Who would have thought you could make a living being a chicken consultant in the city of Chicago? How did that? Thank you, Marianne. How did that occur to you to do that? How did this happen?
Well, I was raised in the country, and I had chickens from age 10 till I was in college. Moved to the city, and of course, you can't have chickens. And one day, I have an international chicken collection. As a matter of fact, I'm wearing my chicken earrings from Estonia. I walked into my accountant's office carrying the rubber chicken purse, which Marianne is checking out right now. And he lives in the Austin neighborhood, and he told me that you can have chickens in the city. And I was amazed. And so I was talking to him about what he could do in his backyard, how he could keep the birds safe, raise the chicks. And he said, well, you could be a chicken consultant. And you mentioned making a living at this. It's
right.
A side gig.
Yeah, okay.
I'm actually a freelance editor, writer, and translator. But this is if I could do this full time, I would.
It's like a therapy side gig, I bet, for you.
It is, very much.
Yeah. And you said in the article I read in DNA Info, that's how we were introduced to you. Andrew Herman came in, and we were talking about it last week, that is it Logan Square? Is where chickens are hottest?
There's a lot in Logan Square,
Humboldt Park. Too? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so why?
Why? Well, a lot of it has to do with sort of the back to your roots, urban agriculture, kind of crunchy granola movement. People want to be more self-sufficient, sustainability. Those are all big issues. And then there's also the animal welfare aspect of it, because most of the eggs we eat in this country are produced in battery cages, where they take, you know, 6 to 8 of these birds and they put them into a very cramped space, and they're not allowed to stretch their wings or scratch or do other normal chicken behaviors. So there is a humaneness aspect to urban chicken keeping.
If you wanted to feed a family of four every day and kept them in eggs, you'd need 4 chickens.
A hen can lay 1 egg a day. So yeah, you'd probably need 4 chickens. If you're going to eat 1 egg a day per person.
And so another thing I read in that story is that it's legal to have the chickens, to raise the eggs, even to sell the eggs, but you can't slaughter the, excuse me, Marianne, but you can't harvest the chickens yourself.
Correct.
And that surprised me a little bit. Why is that?
The law states that no person shall raise any animal intending to use it for food purposes. And then there's a clause that you know, talks about slaughtering specifically. So, we really don't encourage that, because slaughtering can be, it's messy, it's bloody, it's not certainly kind to animals.
I did it once when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And my kids are so tired of hearing the story. But it was a remarkable experience.
Yeah. I've seen my grandparents do it as well. I've never done it myself, at least not for food purposes. I've had to euthanize birds.
Right. You say that a chicken can be a good pet.
Yes.
I'm having a hard time with that one, Jennifer.
They're very personable. Each bird has its own personality. When I got my first four chicks when I was in fourth grade, and they were all white leghorns. I ended up with two roosters and two hens. And as they grew up and I hand-raised them, the personalities became abundantly clear. And I had a very sweet hen whose name was Baby. I had one who was a little paranoid, schizophrenic, and jittery. Her name was Jitterbug. And then there was Hot Stuff, the alpha male, and then there was his little sidekick, whose name was Little Boy. So they do definitely have personalities. They can be, Marianne will mob you looking for food. Yeah. She loves treats.
Okay, so but you're not going to save money having a chicken.
Not necessarily.
Right. It's like our backyard garden. I don't know that we save money by having a garden in our backyard.
Right.
If people are interested in this and they want to help you with your side therapy job, how do they get a hold of you and look into this?
You can contact me via my blog. It's urbanchickenconsultant.wordpress.com. Or if you want a simpler route, just Google Home to Roost LLC and Jennifer Murtoff. There's all kinds of contact information on there. I have a number of classes coming up. I do in-home consultations. And basically, if it has anything to do with chickens, I'll do it.
We've got to run, but you do stuff at the Cook County Jail?
Correct. I installed a chicken keeping program at the jail and designed the coop there.
Yeah, I know they're really moving toward a lot of agriculture there. Yeah. Well, look, it was great to talk to you, and Marianne was a lovely guest.
Yes, she was. She had some things to say.
She only spoke when addressed, which is very nice. I wish you great luck. It was nice to meet you. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to meet you, too.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion Samuelson, Kim Gordon, and Jill Egan as well. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, so we just talked to Jennifer Murtoff, who has sort of started this side business, Home to Roost, where she's actually a consultant to people who want to raise chickens in their backyard, a bit of an entrepreneur. We like to talk about entrepreneurship, and we're going to do that a little bit now in the time we have left in the program. Jason K. Roberts is on a phone line. Jason, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Where are you, Jason?
I'm in Palm Coast, Florida at the moment.
Well, we got better weather. I will bet you $100. What's it doing?
I guarantee if you don't, you're going to. We're about to get
hit. Oh, that's right. You've got the storm, Colin, coming at you.
Well, yes, we do.
Tell me about, everything in right now is about the millennials. They say, you got to build the workplace for the millennials. You got to make this available so you're attractive to millennials. And maybe that's pushing baby boomers out. I don't know. But you make the point that when you consider entrepreneurs, that they're more likely to be baby boomers than they are millennials. Explain that for me.
Well, you have to understand where baby boomers are at in the cycle. Right now, they're closer to retirement, if not already retiring. That's the generation that's the next in terms of retirement. And the problem is, if you've been watching economics, we just don't have any saved money. As a country, our middle class has disappeared, and the numbers prove it. Since 2000, we have made middle class has made less money. I think something along the lines of about $7,000 or $8,000 a year than we did, the previous decades before that. And we just are having a very hard time making ends meet. So the folks that are most affected are, if not the folks that are retired, baby boomers are right in line. And they don't have an option. They can't retire. We just don't have the money. So many of them are retiring from their corporate lives and starting businesses.
Yeah, it's funny because what you're, in a way, you're describing, you just veered off into starting businesses, but you might have taken a left and said, and so they're taking on a second job. Many of these people aren't taking on a second job. They're, in a way, creating a second job.
Exactly. Now, if you noticed, growing up, when I was growing up as a kid, all my friends were baggers at the grocery store. And we all were. Now when you look at those baggers, who are they?
They're adults.
They're grandma and grandpa trying to make ends meet. And unfortunately, that's the issue. baby boomers aren't retired yet, but they are exceptionally worried about their finances. And they should be. So what are we doing right now? What do you do about it? Sometimes if you can't take a second job, I'm personally a big believer in creating your own business. And I've been saying that for years, that I think we need to do more of that. Since the 80s and 90s, basically all our corporate jobs started moving overseas. And now you're seeing the resulted incomes from it. And that started in 2000. So maybe it's time we get back to mom and pop stores that used to dominate the countryside, you know, 30 and 40 years ago.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So if they're creating jobs or building businesses, what kinds of businesses or jobs are they creating?
They're typically going to be small businesses. You know, you think about some of the stuff that you like, and you're seeing baby boomers who basically had a hobby, for example. I know folks that are, you know, photography's kind of a thing now. Mm-hmm. You know, they loved it, and now they're trying to turn it into a business. And these folks are 55 and 60 years old, and they're you know, basically looking at the things they love and trying to figure out how to monetize it, so to speak. And hopefully that carries them through retirement.
Yeah, it's good to know. And it's an interesting sort of thing to think about. First of all, we tend to categorize people by age, which I think is unfortunate. And in this case, maybe we're miscategorizing them by age. The entrepreneurs are the baby boomers. Jason K. Roberts, how do people find out more information about you if they want to find you?
You can go to my personal website, jasonkroberts.com. And from there, you can take a look at our businesses and get a hold of me there.
Wonderful to talk to you. Listen, batten down the hatches and be well through this storm.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Bye-bye. This is a Business Lunch on 720 WGN.